Previously on the Jay and Dan podcast.
Mm-hmm. Washed my mask and it smells like a dirty foot.
What? That's not a problem that most people have.
I don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm. Wait, your mom's not in a senior's home, though.
Well, she's a senior and she has a home. Guess what, Mom? Mm-hmm.
I've had coffee, I've had, you know, yogurt, toast, and I didn't go to the bathroom before I left the house. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure all Home Depots are like this. It's the epicenter of Toronto contractor morning
Mm-hmm. You know what you never see anymore? When you'd go to like an older relative's house and they had the padded toilet seat.
Mm-hmm. Well, Manny's on the line, so he's heard us talking about taking a in public restrooms for the last 2 minutes or so.
You're listening to the Jay and Dan podcast, brought to you by our friends at McDonald's.
Dance.
This music.
Dance. Wait, that's not Jay Onright's voice.
No, it is not.
Natasha Stanishevsky makes her first ever Jay and Dan podcast appearance.
Mm-hmm.
I was guaranteed that we had had you on before.
If you did, I can't remember it either, which is very possible because I have a terrible memory.
Ouch. Yowzies.
No, I'm not saying anything bad.
Oh, okay.
But I'm pretty sure I have not been. I think you guys have talked about me once or twice.
Yeah, we've talked about the McCain commercials.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you get McCain products for the rest of your life?
I do not.
Oh.
Nope. I got a little, a sizable sampling when I first did it that was in my freezer for quite a while. Finally got through that, but that's it.
So, if people aren't familiar, you did a commercial where you showed up to a stranger's house with food,
mm-hmm.
which that was pre-COVID, because you can't do that now.
You cannot. Can you imagine that commercial? That commercial is not possible now. You can't just have random strangers at your house.
Like, they would call the police on you.
They would, yeah.
You'd break every COVID rule known to man.
They wouldn't even open the door, basically.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You're filling in for Jay Onright because he's on vacation.
Yes.
And it's a stay-at-home vacation because we can't go anywhere.
Right.
But that's his dream.
Staycation for Jay?
He just doesn't want to leave his house.
Oh, that's fair.
So he was built for COVID.
Right. There are a lot of people who I think are actually thriving during this time.
And we've brought this up before. It's the perfect way to get out of anything.
Yep, absolutely. Yep.
I'm like, I just blame it on my daughters, and I don't even have to make it up because they don't want me to go anywhere. They're like, mm-hmm. I don't know what's, so mm-hmm. you can't go. I'm like, sorry, can't make it.
Yeah. You just say you're feeling nervous. You don't want to break the rules. You're trying mm-hmm. to be a good citizen. Yeah. I've done that a few times for sure.
Yeah. So it's not breaking rules. It's just being a good citizen.
Right. That's the line. That's the exact line I use. I'm trying to be a good citizen. So no, I can't come to your party.
What is the worst someone's ever butchered your last name? Like, is there a common incorrect pronunciation that people...
No.
Or they just don't even attempt the last name?
That's what is common, is they don't even attempt it. And I don't even remember what the worst one is, because it's just like a jumble of sounds that people will make and then just laugh.
And it's Irish origins?
Yes, both my parents are from Ireland. No, actually, people do pronounce it Staniszewski, which if you look at it, I will accept that because phonetically that's what it is. But the Polish way, yeah, it's a little trickier than that. Double Polish. My dad is Polish. He was born there, actually, and my mom is Polish as well.
Really? Can you speak the language?
Not very much. I can understand more than I can speak. I went to Polish school when I was little, so there's a lot of Polish words in my brain. I know they're up there, I just don't use them very often.
Is it better than the French you just witnessed me speaking with my 9-year-old Ruby on FaceTime?
It is a little bit better than your French, yeah. But you were carrying on a conversation.
No, here's the thing. Here's the thing, Natasha. So she loves French, her first year of French. We repeat the same conversation every day, and I still can't get it right.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And my oldest is like, this is painful. Just stop. And it's like, bonjour, je m'appelle Dan. And then I'm gone. I'm gone. I'm like, comme ci, comme ça? Tabernak?
Languages are tough. Unless you practice them all the time, they're out of your brain and gone.
You need the Rosetta Stone.
Yeah. See, that's a good thing that people apparently are trying to do during the lockdown, during this COVID. One of them was learn a new language, and pick up a new hobby.
Which new language did you learn?
I learned zero languages.
Okay, did you pick up a new hobby? Did you do anything that you wanted, that you had a goal and you achieved?
I did.
Okay.
I have always wanted to buy like a fancy, expensive camera and try to take really nice photos. So I did that. I took the plunge, spent a lot of money on a camera, and tried to become a photographer.
And have you taken good pictures yet?
I have. Yeah, I have. There's a lot to learn on those things. Exposure, shutter speed, you know, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've been trying to learn. There's lots of online stuff, which is good, but there's so much of it. You have to sift through it and try to find the ones that are actually helpful to you, right? Yes.
Sounds like a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
I have a buddy who has an expensive camera, and one time he handed it to me. I'm like, I want to see some of these pictures.
Yeah.
They were horrible. Like, the photos on my phone were 3,000, but you can't say that. You can't say,
no.
Like, I thought first, okay, this is a joke. Like, these are joke pictures.
Right.
No.
I mean, there is an auto setting on those cameras that should help you with the light and everything, but you still, if you don't know how to frame things properly, or I don't know, remember the rule of thirds? Did you learn that in TV school? If you don't know that stuff, then your pictures will still be crap.
I didn't go to TV school. I went to radio school.
Oh, radio school. Mm-hmm. Okay.
You went to school in Alberta?
I did. Yep. Went to NAIT in Edmonton. Got my TV broadcasting diploma there.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Your first job was in Saskatchewan?
My first official paying job was in Yorkton, Saskatchewan.
Home of the Terriers.
That's right. Yep.
Okay, so did you cover the team?
I did not. I was mainly there for news, and I tried to cover sports whenever I could, but there was a guy already covering sports, so I kind of had to let him lead the way. But if I ever got a chance, then I try to weasel my way in there and get some experience.
What's happening news-wise in Yorkton? Like, is there a lot of farm talk?
There's a lot of farm talk.
Flooding. So you knew the price of, like, wheat and everything? Then.
I should have. That was the kind of stuff I was doing, though. Yeah, lots of flooding. I did a garlic farm story once. Things like that, yeah.
Does a garlic farm smell like garlic?
No.
Hmm.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, because when you buy a clove of garlic, it doesn't smell until you unwrap it.
Crack it open. Yeah.
Hmm. And back to pandemic talk. Did you do more baking? Because you're known for your whip it up Wednesdays. Now it's whip it up whenever.
Right. I did bake more in the beginning. But then when I realized we were all going to be hunkered down for months and months, I kind of had to stop because I had nobody to eat it, right? Usually when I bake, or a lot of the time, I give it away to people, or I'll bring it to the newsroom because I don't want to eat it all. But then lockdown, it was like, well, you're not supposed to leave. You're not supposed to see anybody. So there are a few people I would do like drop-offs on their stairs. But after a while, I was like, okay, they don't want my food either, I can tell. So that's it. I got to stop.
Why? They drop it off, and as you're walking around, they're pelting you with it?
They have that fake smile. Oh, thanks. But I can tell they don't really want my fatty cake or whatever. Yeah. But a lot of people were baking on social anyways. You could see people who don't
bread.
Bake as often. Yeah.
Bread was the big thing.
Bread,
but I'm like, but it's
thing.
So available.
I know.
It's everywhere. You can get it at a gas station.
Yeah. I don't know. Somehow that's what caught everybody's fancy, I guess, or caught their attention.
What's your go-to dessert where you can do it without any directions? Or do you have a lot of those?
Ooh, no, I don't have a lot of those because I like trying new recipes. Like, I like switching it up all the time. But actually, the one I made on your show with Jay when you were not there was that frozen dessert one with ice cream sandwiches. I don't know if you remember that video.
I do, yeah. Jay couldn't get the whipped cream open.
The Cool Whip.
The Cool Whip.
That one you don't need to, if you don't have the right proportions, it doesn't matter. You just throw it all in and it still tastes amazing because it's ice cream sandwiches. Like, how do you mess that up?
I have a problem at my home because my daughters, they love to bake and I don't like cleaning up because you know what it's like after baking. If a 12-year-old and now a 13-year-old and a 9-year-old bake and they say they've cleaned up, in kids' eyes, they've cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a film over, and you can see every single cupboard. They like, why are you looking in that cupboard? That cupboard doesn't even have anything in it. Yeah. Why your handprints on that?
It can be a real disaster. Like that film of flour that like flies up.
Yes.
That's everywhere. Yeah, I know. You should see my kitchen. That's another reason I kind of stopped, because I was like sick of cleaning up all the
time. Okay, so I'm not alone.
No, you are
not.
So
even
alone.
A professional baker agrees with me. So I'll have to play this for my daughters, because I said that it's done. That and slime.
Slime?
They love making slime.
How do you make slime?
Glue, shaving cream, and then some other things.
What do you do with it after?
Good question. Leave it around the house? Yeah.
Leave it around the house.
And making stress balls out of balloons and finding different things to put in them is another.
Oh.
Huh. You know what's a good one? Couscous.
To put in a balloon?
Yes.
It's
a great feel to it. Also, another one. This is going to sound weird. Again, it's the... They've had a lot of time off school.
Sounds like an arts and crafts.
One, I'm like, let's try this one. Ashes from the fireplace.
Okay. Really?
It feels amazing in there.
You just, where did you guys even get this idea? Somewhere on the internet, probably. You just fill up balloons with things.
I think my kids might be into the weed.
Well, can, I could probably use a stress balloon. Can they make me one?
I can bring you 7 tomorrow.
After working on this show, I need one.
Whoa. We have approximately 32 at home right now.
32.
You can guess what's in each of them. One has rocks. One has rice. Another one has like a sealant. That one feels good, too.
Uh-huh.
It runs the gamut. We walked around our town the other day to find things to stuff in balloons. I'm like, we look weird right now.
You should sell them on the side of the road. People would be snapping those up. Everyone's stressed out right now. They should make a little stand, like a lemonade stand, and sell them.
Okay.
There you go.
And I've provided all the ingredients, so I get a cut of that.
For sure.
That's good. We've got before we get to our first guest, we should talk about sad news we got just before we came in here.
Yes.
Joey Moss, Edmonton legend, associated with the Oilers for, probably 30, 40 years passed away.
Yeah. He has been around forever. Like you said, a legend. Everybody in Edmonton knows him. He's is as recognizable as Wayne Gretzky would be on the street in Edmonton. There's not a single person who doesn't know who he is. So
I messaged Shane Corson because he sent out a Instagram post saying so sad to hear about the passing of my pal. And then we were like, wait, Shane Corson played for the Oilers? And then we looked at, he played 3 years there. So he sent a great message. He couldn't appear on the podcast because he had a late dinner. He said he used to have him over for movie night, and McDonald's was his favorite night of the week. He said he made me so happy, could be having the worst day, and then I'd see him, and I'll be back to smiles.
Right.
Yeah, so that's the overwhelming sentiment that you hear about Joey Moss. I had one experience when my second radio job was in Fort McMurray, Alberta. And once a year, we'd go down to the Oilers dressing room and do our sports show there. So we go get our interviews and stuff. Well, I say we. It was just me.
Right.
Like, I'm just like a young greenhorn. I'm like,
I know the
Bill
feeling.
Guerin, do you like hockey?
Right.
It's kind of So I'm doing interviews and everyone's out of the room. And then I hear this vacuum turn on and I'm getting who would I be talking to? Probably like Doug Waite or something. Then, And I feel something on my shoe. Joey Moss is cleaning the room. He's hitting me with the vacuum. And then Doug Waite's like, you get out. but he said it politely. He's
that's awesome.
He's got a schedule. Don't get in the way of his schedule. So I was laughing. That was my one interaction, and I loved it.
He took his job so seriously, though, right? I think that's why he was so respected, because that job, just being a part of the community, being a part of those teams, was just meant everything to him.
So we'll probably hear from Wayne Gretzky. Hopefully, someone has reached out to him. We'll probably hear a comment from him. Hopefully, share some stories.
Mm-hmm. I saw he tweeted something, I think, but I think we need to hear more than that. I'm sure he has a million good stories.
Wayner's on Twitter?
Well, his wine estate or something like that tweeted. I don't know if it's him or somebody else for him.
Wayne
Janet's
Gretzky.
On there too. She'll probably tweet something, or Instagram maybe.
Do you have any interactions, because you are from Edmonton, with Wayne Gretzky?
Have I had any interactions?
Have you ever met him?
Yes, I have.
Oh, and?
Yep. The first time I met him, he was great. Super kind, lovely guy. shook his hand, got a photo. And then when I moved here, I interviewed him during a luncheon.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of luncheon was this?
So I had like 40 minutes with him.
It paid gig?
Yes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For McCain's?
No.
Oh.
But he was great. He's a pro. He's been asked the same questions a bazillion times, right? But
did you think you asked him a question he's never been asked?
Well, that's
before?
Just it, right? I was trying to be that person. Ooh, I'm going to get a good question in. But no, I don't think so. Plus, I also think that if I remember correctly, they sort of gave me a list of questions that I was supposed to stick to because they don't want you going off the wall and asking some weird stuff to him. So, but no, he was awesome. Yeah,
I was at the Ritz one night in Toronto, the Ritz-Carlton. I was doing a gig there too. I was at the bar by myself, and Wayne was with a group of like 3-4 people, like from me to you. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm texting Jay. Right. I'm like, Wayner's at the bar.
Right.
He's go say something. I'm like, but he's talking to people. I don't want to be like, hey, nice to meet you. Right. So I didn't do anything. I just looked at him.
Did you regret it?
No, because I would have just sounded like a fool.
Right.
I would have said, hey, I know Gord Miller.
Right.
Because Gord Miller's good buddies with him, right?
I don't know. Is he? Gord Miller is good buddies with a lot of people. Gord knows, rubs shoulders with a lot of celebrities.
Can't be rubbing shoulders with people now.
No. That's another thing you can't do anymore.
And it'd be really weird if that's how you introduced yourself to people.
Well, people were doing elbows, which is almost the same thing, right? After golf now, we all tap elbows, which is so lame.
So the reason I messaged Shane Corson is because I met him at an Irish event that I hosted 1 week before the world shut down. And there was 1,000 people in a convention center room in Toronto. And I'm like, I don't know. That was like the last big event that convention center ever hosted.
Right.
And I was telling people, I'm like, there's like a virus going around. So let's like, well, it was an Irish event. So... And I can say it. Everyone was bombed.
Yeah.
So, I'm Irish.
Nobody took it seriously up until, I think, Rudy Gobert shut down the league, basically. And then everybody was like, all right, well, I guess this is a thing now.
Yeah.
Right?
For how long now?
Yeah.
Eight months we've been doing this?
March, April, May. Yep. Something like that.
My kids were talking about the timeline of they're like, everyone thought it was great when school got let out. Oh, we're going to get 2 weeks off. And then.
Nope. Nope.
Like the whole face things, like the face mask. That's with us for life now.
You think so?
Yes.
I refuse to accept it. No, I think it can go back.
But if you see someone from now until the day you die, you will not think twice about it.
No. But I myself, I mean, depending on the circumstances, but I don't know. I'm tired of wearing those things. Obviously, I still do. But I think a lot of people are ready to ditch them and will if they feel safe again.
Well, you should ask our first guest these questions or maybe speculate with him because he had a run in with the COVID virus.
Mm-hmm.
John Liu is going to be joining us here. And yeah, we aren't breaking any news because he sent it out on social media. He said, hey, I got to tell you, this thing's for real.
Yep.
So I have never spoken to anyone who's contracted the virus.
Me neither, actually, now that I think about it. I know one acquaintance who had it, but other than that, nobody in my circle or even close to me has had it. So yeah, this will be interesting to chat with John.
And I also want to talk about an earlier incident in his life. In which he showed me pictures, like John and I have been at the network for, well, he's been here longer than I, when he hit a moose once. Have you ever seen the aftermath of a vehicle hitting a moose?
Yes. You might find this hard to believe, but in Saskatchewan, I covered a lot of vehicles hitting moose and wildlife. Oh, yeah. It's those things just decimate cars.
Because they're at a very awkward height.
Yes.
Because you take them out at the legs and then the body comes through.
Those antlers are right through the windshield and that's it.
So, John, I hope I'm not letting the cat out of the bag. I was just telling Natasha about the pictures you once showed me of a moose going through your car.
I was wondering why you guys were talking about antlers going through a windshield.
I've never forgotten those pictures you showed me, probably 20 years ago?
Oh, well, not. It only feels like 20 years ago, Dan, but no, that would have been 2008, May long weekend of 2008. And yeah, so that was, near brush with death. I mean, we weren't injured badly, my wife and I. You know, just a few cuts and scrapes and, you know, moose poop all over us and the dogs. And the car was written off as a biohazard. But that was it was something.
Where did it happen? Did it happen at night? Province, what city?
It was in New Brunswick, Trans-Canada, at about probably 2 in the morning. We were driving from Quebec to my wife's hometown on the Bay of Fundy shore in Nova Scotia. And I was asleep in the passenger seat, and Caroline was driving. And it was a pitch-black highway, I think probably just a, probably about, I'm guessing, about half an hour east of Oromocto, New Brunswick. And she was a blind turn in the road. She was on cruise control going about 115, and moose was there in the middle of the highway. She went around the bend, and, you know, it's pitch black, and the moose is right there, and there's nothing she could do. Basically plowed through the moose and blew it up, like literally blew it up into moose steaks. And we lived to tell the tale. So
have you ever slept in a car since?
I think my wife had a little bit of PTSD, you know, like a little trauma after that, because she was really nervous in the car as a passenger for probably a few weeks after the accident. But but me, I don't know, I guess just because I was asleep when the accident happened, you know, I just heard this really loud bang, and something hit me in the face and the neck, and then this rush of cool air coming through where the windshield was. What hit me in the neck and the face was the windshield, the safety glass crumpling from the full windshield, crumpling into like a cone and hitting me in the face and cutting my neck, cutting my face. And so I was really, really really, really fortunate that that's about the worst of what I sustained.
By the way, John, you and Natasha have never met. We work in such a strange business where you can work with a person for 30 years and never meet them in person. So it's great that and Natasha, this is her first time on the podcast. So yeah,
we haven't met John, have we? I was racking my brain. I was like, I don't think we've met.
No, and like Dan said, it's the funny thing about the business. And I mean, if I was still stationed in Toronto, we would have met 13. Sorry, Natasha, I can't remember how many years we've been with the network now, but yeah, I mean, I moved to Quebec 13 years ago, so we would have met quite a long time ago, but I was still stationed in Toronto.
And John, how long have you been at the network? Because when I started in 2002, you were here in the newsroom.
I started in March 2000, so I just passed my 20th anniversary. You know what, Dan? This is the crazy thing. My 20th anniversary was the day the day after the NHL shut down the season due to the pandemic.
Oh, wow. Well, congrats on 20 years, buddy.
Thanks. You're approaching quickly, too.
Yes. Now, let's get into your health scare. And I mentioned off the top how you made it public knowledge that, hey, this virus is real. Why don't you run us through your entire experience with COVID?
Oh, okay. It was just over 7 weeks ago, September long weekend, that I first started developing symptoms, which was severe fatigue, muscle aches, and a headache. And I just thought that maybe it was just some weird fall allergies that were bugging me. But that was on a Sunday of long weekend, and I played golf on a Tuesday with a couple of buddies. And then after I played, I went home that afternoon and slept 10 hours that night. And that's really unusual for me. And so I woke up the next morning and thought, you know what, I should probably find out for sure, just to make certain that this is not just perhaps weird allergies. And so I contacted Quebec Public Health, did the online questionnaire, and they said you should call for a COVID test. So I did. And a couple of days later, on the Friday of that week, I went and got tested. And just over 24 hours later, I got the results back, and I was positive. So at that point, basically, they just said, well, you know what, just stay hydrated, keep eating, stay at home, stay isolated, right? And so I thought that I could just wait out the symptoms, that they would pass on their own. But at that point, I was still by myself, because my wife and I have a home in Atlantic Canada, actually the town that we were heading to in Nova Scotia, that I was describing in the moose accident. And so she spends the summers there. And at that point, she was still out east. So when I got my results, I called her and said, you know what, look, Caroline, you know, don't come back just yet because I'm still infectious. So I didn't want her to get exposed to the virus. And so I thought, okay, just going to keep going about my business here and hope to get better by the middle of the following week. Then on Monday, I was in my office and started getting this really strange dizzy spell where I was feeling nauseous and really disoriented. And so I got up to go to the bedroom to lie down and wait for this dizzy spell to pass. But I had to pass a stairway in the hallway on my way through. And as bad luck would have it, I blacked out and fell down half a flight of stairs. Oh. So I woke up with my legs sticking through the banister rails and my knees hurt, my head hurt, my neck hurt, my elbow hurt. Everything that hit stairs on the way down basically was throbbing and radiating pain. And so it took me, I don't really know how long, to kind of figure out what had happened and get my wits back about me and try to piece together what exactly, how long was I out, what had happened. And so it was really not a great way to start the day. And then a few hours later, I had another dizzy spell and blacked out again and fell in my kitchen. Fortunately, no damage after that particular incident. But then at that point, I called my brother, who's a family physician in Winnipeg, in my hometown of Winnipeg, and asked him. I told him what had happened, and he said, you know what, call 911, get an ambulance right now. And so I did. And you know, sitting there waiting for the ambulance, I called my wife and said, you know, sorry, I'm on the way to the hospital shortly. I can't do this alone now. You know, can you come home? So basically she packed up what she needed to, got in the car and drove overnight back from Nova Scotia to Quebec, and got back to our home at about 2-3 in the morning Tuesday. And by that time I'd have been admitted to the hospital. And the doctor that first treated me suspected that I had a pulmonary embolism, which is a blood clot in the lungs. And so they tested me twice just to make sure that I was positive for that particular affliction. And so they started me on a treatment of blood thinners pretty much right away while I was there, but they also kept me overnight to get x-rays done, CT scan, angio scan, everything, just to make sure that everything that got hurt in the fall down the stairs, that there was no lasting damage, and also to basically assess the multiple blood tests that they did on me to make sure that there was nothing else insidious or untoward that might have accompanied the COVID. And so I went home the next afternoon, and my wife had basically scoured the house, you know, disinfected it from top to bottom. And for probably about a week to 10 days, she slept in the basement. I slept upstairs just to make sure that we didn't have, that we minimized our contact so that that her risk of infection would be as low as possible. But the fact of the matter is, by the time I got home from the hospital, I was already approaching 10 days since my symptoms started, and medical professionals will say that basically 10 days after the onset of your COVID symptoms, you should be safe to interact with people again. I mean, obviously not go into large gatherings, but that basically the contagious stage of the virus would have run its course. And at that point, you just have to try to get over the symptoms because there are no drugs to treat it, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. The only drugs that I was taking was, aside from the blood thinners that the doctors had prescribed to me, because I have to be on that treatment for 3 months to dissolve the blood clot in my lung. And actually, later this week, I'm going for an ultrasound at the hospital to just see where that clot is at. Hopefully, it's diminished significantly, or hopefully disappeared. But the thing is, I still have to take the blood thinners until the clot is completely gone. So once my fever went away, and I didn't need to take Tylenol to control the fever symptoms, I've been on the road to recovery, which is approaching 4 weeks now. But the thing is with the blood thinners, because it reduces your red blood cell count, I'm my endurance and my strength and stamina is just not there. And so for the last 4 weeks, I've been just sort of taking on more physical activity bit by bit, starting with walking the dog, and to the point where last Friday I was able to play a round of golf and doing a lot of work in the yard with the leaves because it's fall and it's that time of year. Mm-hmm. So on the road to recovery, moving in a positive direction, but yeah, still not back to 100% because from a physical standpoint, it will still be weeks to possibly a couple of months or more before I get back to my old self.
It's crazy, and we're so glad that you're on the road to recovery because you had us scared there for a bit. But to have a virus in which you can't take anything for it. That's the one that you don't really think about if you don't contract it. You just say, okay, I just don't want to get it, obviously. But then when you do have it, it must be kind of scary.
Yeah, it is, Dan, because, initially I thought that, like I said, that I could just wait out the symptoms because I knew that I couldn't take anything for it. And that's what makes this really unlike a flu, simply because with a flu, you vomit with medication and, rest and hydrate, and within a week, you're okay, generally, right? But in this case here, these symptoms that I experienced, I never have with any kind of flu in my lifetime. And so it was really unique. It was unusual. And then the fall down the stairs was sort of the icing on the cake. But I have to be honest with you here, that fall down the stairs and the trip to the hospital, it was actually there. It was a blessing in disguise because if I had stayed at home and didn't have any adverse reactions like the dizzy spells and the blackouts, I would not have gotten that pulmonary embolism diagnosed. It would have gone untreated, and had that happened, who knows how bad it could have gotten? Like it could have turned into a severe problem with my lungs. I'm really lucky because the clot probably would have originated in one of my legs. And it can go one of two ways. If it goes into your right ventricle of your heart, then it travels into the lungs, which becomes a pulmonary embolism. But if it goes into the left ventricle, it can travel to your brain, which could trigger a stroke. And so, really, I dodged a bullet. And the worst case scenario, if I was really unfortunate, could have been... extremely severe consequences or maybe even fatal consequences. So I really count myself lucky, and I'll tell you, I'm really grateful that things unfolded the way they did. So when I'm out walking the dog and spending time with my wife, like we're sitting in the backyard just doing yard work, or we have a backyard fireplace and sitting there and looking up at the sky and smelling.
I'm having trouble hearing you.
Sorry, that's Siri. She takes the station off my wristwatch sometimes. I hope she's not logging that information or sending it to Apple or something like that.
Yes. They're always listening.
I'm just really grateful, that it's the air smells fresher, food tastes better. I just feel like I was granted a pass. And you really appreciate the little things in life after going through an experience like that. And you know what? It's like my experience compared to other people who are long haulers suffering symptoms of the virus, or obviously there have been so many fatalities worldwide, especially in the United States. Really, it's like I could have been so much worse off. And so my heart really goes out to people and families who've lost loved ones, who've been affected by the virus, who continue to be after they've been infected and go for months still feeling after effects. So, it's a terrible, terrible illness. And so I really wish and hope that people would take it seriously, especially since now, numbers are increasing all across the country and cities and towns are going into lockdown. I don't know if the terminology is correct, but restrictions. we need to be responsible to each other. That's all I can say, is that we have to take better care of each other, mm-hmm. because we see the numbers rising like crazy.
John, do you have any, like, I'm assuming you were doing everything possible to be safe in terms of washing your hands and wearing a mask and sanitizer. Do you have any idea how you got it?
Well, Natasha, what you said there is 100% true.
Yeah.
Since the start of the pandemic, I've been taking all of Quebec and the federal government's public health measures seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I take a look back at the week or just the few days prior to my symptoms starting, the only common thread where I had been to the same place, which was about four or five times leading up to my symptoms starting, was my local gym.
Okay.
And we see everywhere that gyms, fitness facilities, sports facilities, they're being temporarily shut down because of the risk of virus transmission, because it is so easily, it's so contagious and it's so easily passed on, that I don't think I'll ever know for certain, but just given the circumstantial evidence, I have to believe that I contracted it at my local gym.
So this might sound strange, but because you had it, do you have people, when you tell them, you're like, oh, you weren't following the rules?
No, I haven't.
Okay,
I haven't
good.
Encountered that, Dan, yeah, to be honest with you. But then again, you know what? When I went public with my story on Twitter, I didn't open my tweet to comments because I didn't want to have to deal with comments like that.
Right.
I just wanted to share my story in the hopes that because we are public figures, that if people have a relatable story that they can consume, and that it might twig something that's like, oh, okay, yeah, well, you know what? Maybe I should change my mind about how I feel about this or what I think about it. I think it just adds more to the public domain when you have people that are sort of, for lack of a better term, public property,
mm-hmm.
that we can share an experience that could be beneficial to other people, and that is that this is real.
1,000%.
100% real. This is, and it's serious. So, you know, it's like, don't take risks, especially if you're asymptomatic. You could be a carrier, and would you want to be responsible for infecting your spouse or your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your siblings or your parents or your grandparents or your coworkers, your friends? You know, like, would you want that on your conscience?
And yeah, no.
That's what I don't understand, that people that flout the public health recommendations, is that this is not about protecting yourself. Protecting yourself is sort of the secondary consideration. This is more about protecting other people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so anyhow, I could go on at length about that, but I'm not going to. I'm going to stop right there.
Okay, well, I wanted to ask you about a guy that you've covered. Well, he was there for 2 years. Max Domi, our good friend, leaving the team, going to Columbus. He had a falling out, sounds like, with the coach. The community is going to miss that guy. He's just such a likable guy.
Yeah, Max was very highly regarded and respected and loved in the dressing room, just because of his energy, his personality. That when he was on, he really helped the club go. You know, he really was like one of the engines, similar to Brendan Gallagher in the way that he played, with a lot of jam and a lot of intensity and grit, in addition to his skill. But the fact of the matter is that the way that things transpired from training camp onward this summer, when Max, because of his type 1 diabetes for health reasons, got to training camp late by a week, but because of that, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who nobody thought would have accomplished what he did this summer after the horribly disappointing, frustrating regular season he had endured in his sophomore campaign, he really showed that he was worthy of the position that they gave him coming out of training camp, which he took into the play-in round against Pittsburgh and continued against Philly. And so basically from the outset, Max was put in a position where it just wasn't a position for him to succeed, you know, playing fourth line center. The thing is that in the two seasons, well, more so this most recent regular season, what the coaching staff discovered, or at least the impression that they formed, was that Max is a better center than he is a winger. But then all of a sudden, he got squeezed out of the, on the depth chart because of Kotkaniemi and Nick Suzuki, who played extremely well in the entire postseason. And so, as Claude Julien put it last week when he spoke to us media, he said that Max became a little bit expendable. And which, from a depth chart standpoint, yeah, it was true. In addition to the fact that Max was an RFA, and so he was coming up for a contract, and I think he wanted to sign long-term, but the club wasn't exactly sure if they wanted to go that route just because of the whole center wing business. And so it led to, there was friction, definitely friction between Max and Claude Julien during the postseason, and it just created an untenable situation. And we saw the outcome of that. So it just felt like that there was going to be a trade, and it did come to fruition.
How's Claude doing? Because he had some health scare. He left the bubble, and then he didn't return. From all indications, sounds like he's doing pretty good.
Yeah. Well, when we spoke to him last week, which was Thursday, I believe, they did a Zoom call. The Habs did a Zoom call, and as soon as he popped up on the screen, I looked, and it's like, oh, he looks really good. Like, I don't know how much weight Claude lost, but it was noticeable. And he was smiling and looking very relaxed and very enthusiastic about the changes that Marc Bergevin had made to the roster and all the options that it gave him. And so he was he seemed to be in a really good place. And he had already addressed his health issues when we spoke to him at the conclusion of the playoffs. And so we didn't ask him about his health, but it was evident just by looking at him that he's much, much better than August, mid-August, when he was initially struck with chest pains while he was in the bubble. So that was good to see, because Claude is one of the genuine good guys in the league. I'm sure that their players who played for him might not agree with that, far as the coaching relationship is concerned, but as a human being, Claude is one of the real good ones. And so you just feel good for him on a human level that he's overcome those health concerns, and seems like he's, with his lifestyle changes and with the club in much better shape than it was last season, I think that he'll be a happier camper once we get into the next training camp.
Has life calmed down for Carey Price? Because I remember about, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago, I don't know if he said it or the story came out where you're a goalie for the Montreal Canadiens, and if you're like Patrick Roy, if you're Carey Price, if you're Ken Dryden, you can't go anywhere. So it sounded like life had become a bothersome to him because of his fame and his stardom in Montreal. It sounds like he's always a mellow guy, but it sounds like that has kind of calmed down.
Yeah, it has to some degree. I mean, the expectations are always going to be there. The critics are always going to be there. But I think what's really helped Carey Price deal with all the pressure and the scrutiny that comes along with being the guy in Montreal is that he's a family man now. His eldest daughter was born, I believe, 3 years ago, and he has a daughter who is a year and a half younger, I believe. And then either yesterday or today, his wife Angela delivered their third child, baby boy, baby boy named Lincoln. We saw the pictures on Twitter and Instagram, and so so Carey is a dad for the third time, and that's really helped. It's really helped him, I think, sort of put everything into perspective. I mean, it hasn't diminished his intensity in terms of his competitiveness and how much he cares, because that'll always be there, but his greater priority is his family. And so I think that it's really given him perspective that's helped him deal with the pressures and the expectations and the scrutiny. And when he's on, as we saw during the play-in and the playoffs this summer, granted, very unusual circumstances. He had 4 months off, 5 months off, just like everybody else did. But we saw just how sharp and how dominating he was coming off of that type of break. And you got to spend a ton of time with his family, right? Being isolated. And yeah, so Price was in a really good place coming into the postseason, and that helped trigger some of the moves that Mark Bergevin made, that he decided, you know what, it's time to use that big chunk of cap space that he had sitting there for probably the last two, three summers, and made a lot of moves. And so that's going to make Carey Price that much more effective, because he'll get more rest with Jake Allen as his backup, and with a much more solid roster in front of him, especially a team offensively that should be able to keep the puck in the opponent's end more than having to defend as much as they would have been in seasons past.
Mm-hmm. Well, John, this is great. We really appreciate you coming on. There was some tough topics like hitting moose and such, but did you eat any of the moose? Because some people do that, right? Because you are allowed to keep roadkill.
No, but you know what, maybe I should have kept the antlers, but I'm not even sure if it was a buck. There were enough souvenirs left in the interior of the car. If we wanted to, we could have taken a little bit of offal or,
Can you believe that was enough? I drove an RV out from here in Ontario all the way out to PEI and back last summer with my girls. We did not see a single moose the entire time.
That is very strange. But
you know what happened?
They put those fences up.
Yes, basically. Oh. All the moose gates. Oromocto, yeah. Yeah, oh. Both sides of the Trans-Canada is moose fence. Wasn't there to save my wife and my car. Mm-hmm. But we have a great story to tell after the fact, because we all four of us, the two dogs and my wife and I, walked away from the accident. So
yeah,
which is not often the case.
The moose fences, if you haven't seen them, there's like a gate in certain sections where if they go through it, they can't get back out towards the road.
Right.
Yeah, and it just goes on for it never ends. It's a lot of fencing.
Right.
So whoever got that contract, that fence company made some coin.
See, I thought there was something about those fences though, because then their predators learn to chase them towards the fences and get them.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't.
Just throwing that out there.
I could believe that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about Alberta and Saskatchewan. Same thing with all the animals out there. I think there was something about those fences that you just have to be careful. You don't ruin the whole animal kingdom and set things off.
Now I picture like a wolf or something in a suit and tie at a council meeting. Yes, put up fences. That's the plan.
Lobbying for it.
That's right. Okay, John, we've taken enough of your time. Get back to your evening, and we thank you again, buddy.
Thanks, John. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Natasha. It was great chatting.
Okay, talk to you later. That's John Liu, our Montreal Bureau Chief. Covers the Montreal Canadiens. He said, what, for 13 years now?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Long time.
Good dude. And you got to meet him? Still not in person.
Nope. Just, yeah. And maybe I never will. Farhan Lalji I've met once way out in BC.
Do you ever run into people and they're like, oh, yeah, my cousin works at TSN. And they say a name, you're like,
all the time.
We don't see 99% of the people that work here, because they're here 9 to 5 and they aren't even here 9 to 5 now because they work from home.
Exactly.
So yes. Like, oh, you know, Bill in sales. I'm like, I've never met anyone in sales.
To explain to everybody that we don't show up until what, 9 o'clock some nights or whatever.
And then do you ever get are you ever going to get a good shift like during the day?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to say, when do sports happen?
Right. Yeah.
At night.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big explanation. I actually do have the best shift ever, are the ones at night, obviously.
To this day, you probably have the same. I still have cousins that think I work in the morning because our show loops in the morning. They're like, oh, you're up early? Or not, you're up early. They're like, oh, you're already off work? I'm like,
right.
I was live last night at midnight, you idiot.
My family has figured that out, at least. They still get the time change mixed up. They don't know if I'm ahead or behind them, which gets a little annoying, but... Hmm. Whatever.
I got to read this. Before I do, McDonald's is the podcast sponsor. Mm-hmm. Do you have, what's your go-to McDonald's order?
Mm-hmm.
In a pinch, you're like, oh, I'm starving. I need this. And I know it's great every time. Well, everything's great every time.
Six chicken McNuggets and fries or a McDouble.
Big Mac. Eh?
Sometimes after golfing, when I'm starving, I'll just go straight for the chocolate milkshake.
Good choices. What's your dipping sauce for those nuggets?
Sweet and sour.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I do like the honey.
Yeah, honey's good. They're all barbecue was pretty good too. The mustard one, I remember.
Honey mustard?
Fourth on the list in terms of what I liked the most. Yeah.
Coast to Coast Monopoly at McDonald's is on now until November 9th. Guests can play by peeling game stamps from a variety of participating menu items with 1 in 5 chances to win. Don't miss out on millions of prizes that could have you winning big and feeling good, such as the new $1,000 for you and $1,000 for the Ronald McDonald House of your choice prize. Head to a McDonald's near you to start playing. We've been peeling the cups on our show and getting our game pieces and getting a Canadian geography lesson, and we revealed 2 winners last night. Well, we didn't win them. Mm-mm. The winners, like actual guests of McDonald's. Someone won a vehicle, another person won $10,000.
Nice.
Yeah. And you got a couple of game pieces that you still have to trade me because my daughters are filling out the board.
Oh, okay. I forgot what I got yesterday.
No, you got Halifax Airport.
Oh, yes.
And something else. I left for work last night with a Monopoly game in progress. I was in control. And my babysitter came and she was playing my kids. She sent me a message like 20 minutes after I left. Yeah, sorry, we're bankrupt. She
took over for you?
Landed on Boardwalk that had a hotel on it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Boardwalk will get you. Boardwalk and what was Park Place, right? Those are the 2 blue ones.
So I said, thanks a lot. And she said, your kids really take this seriously.
Oh,
I'm like, yeah, as you should.
Yeah.
You don't half-ass things.
Monopoly's a big deal when you're young, when you're kind of in that age group. I feel like we've really got into it as kids, too.
Here's the problem, though. So Ruby, the 9-year-old, she won for the first time right around the start of the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
It was later revealed. She was cheating the entire game.
How?
She was just, I put my money in there for those houses. And then she was doing it while we were doing other things. And she had like houses and hotels everywhere. And we're like, and then finally, like a couple of days later, my oldest and I are talking. We're like, where did she get all the money for that? Because
wow.
It makes sense. Yeah. And then she later revealed, she goes, oh yeah, I was just taking them.
She's a little entrepreneur.
She's a little Donald Trump, just your hand.
Businesswoman.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, sleazy. Sleaze ball, Ruby.
Oh, Ruby. I like that name.
Okay, so now we got to go to a TV show.
Yes, we do.
Anything else we need to take care of, stuff?
All good.
We've got our commercial read in, and that's it.
Correct.
Boom.
Okay, we're done. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. That was great. Yeah. Informative.
You didn't talk to John Liu. You said you wanted to talk to him about his fashion
sense. I know.
And I forgot to ask if he still has the long hair.
Well, see, we're going to have to just invite him back.
I guess so.
There's a good reason.
Mm-hmm. That is, if you do come back.
I will come back if you invite me.
Okay. You're always invited.
All right.
Enjoy your week. Bye.
Bye.
They're going home.
Bobrovsky, you can't grow beer to save.
You're listening to the Jay and Dan Podcast, brought to you by our friends at McDonald's. James Duffy presents the Rubber Boots Podcast.
So we're sitting down at our table. The waiter comes up, and he's like profusely sweating. And this is like 100% his first line to us. He goes, "Hello, I am not well. I'm very ill."
You ate there?
I came down with it yesterday. I've just not been good. Not good at all.
Get it at tsn.ca and anywhere you get your podcasts.